Welcome to the Directing Animation Live Cast with Scott Weiser. Now that I'm done directing the development and first episode of the second series of Space Station Animation, I'm joining up with Steamroller Animation to push the boundaries of the art form. Thanks to the support of so many of you, I'm continually developing more than 10 dynamic feature film pitches while mastering the art of telling deeply meaningful stories. Today we have a very unique and wonderful guest, Aaron Augenblick. He has worked on projects for Netflix, for Adult Swim, and his current project is for PBS Kids. It's called City Island. We're going to show you a clip today. Super excited about that. And I'm interested to know, you know, really quick, like the 30-second Reader's Digest version of how you got into animation. Aaron?
Well, first off, Scott, thank you so much for having me. I love the podcast. I love your deep dives into animation storytelling and what makes a successful story. In movies and TV, I always love talking about that stuff. So thank you. And happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday.
So you want the 30-second version of my entire life.
Yes.
Okay. So
no longer.
I've always been a cartoonist. I've always made comics. I made animation from a very, very early age. Even when I was a little kid, I was making either claymations or crude animations, which is like the home video camera. I eventually graduated to using computers. I was pretty early in having a computer because my dad is a software guy. So I had like an Apple IIe that I used to make animations on. So I think one important thing was that like early on, I already knew that you could use computers to make animation, but that it didn't have to, you know, change the way that you wanted to draw things. So that was kind of cool. I went to School of Visual Arts in New York City, and I got a degree in animation there. And I was learning everything about New York is a huge influence on me. And all of the art scene in New York City was a really big deal, whether it's music or museums or movies or animation. I'm just a big fan of New York City and the animation history that a lot of people don't even know about. I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that the Fleischers were out in Brooklyn basically creating, you know, the way animation got made. And in some theories, the very first cartoon character, Coco the Clown, out in I think they were out near Brighton Beach. And so I'm obsessed with New York animation and I'm happy to be a part of that lineage. So quickly after school, I worked for MTV Animation. And I learned a lot of what I know about how animation production works from MTV. I was lucky enough to work on a few shows there, including a show called Daria, which I ended up directing. So I started as a PA.
Oh.
And after about 2 years, I was directing. So I moved around and moved up pretty fast. And I was pretty happy about that. And I really did. I was a sponge while I was there. I was working in design and layout and direction eventually and you know, assistance and all the different stages of animation, all in my mind thinking eventually I'd like to do my own thing. I'd like to have my own studio. I kind of always knew that. I kind of, you know, in working at a corporate headquarters of Viacom skyscraper, I already had a sense that I don't want to do this forever. I'd rather sort of try something a little more handmade, a little more independent. So only after 2 years of working in the industry at MTV, I started my studio. So I started my studio very young. I think I might've been 22.
Wow.
And I opened my studio in Brooklyn, in Dumbo, Brooklyn. And I have been here ever since. And that was roughly 24 years ago that I opened my studio.
That's wonderful.
And we have done a wide variety of animation over the years. Everything's 2D, everything's hand-drawn. That's the one thing that does connect everything we've ever done. We've mainly worked in the adult space on shows like Ugly Americans, Wonder Shows, and The Jellies, Super Jail. We came pretty known for a certain kind of adult cartoony comedy forward animation. Recently, I have become very interested in kids animation because it's always been a huge influence on me. I think, you know, I still say, you know, probably if I had to boil it down, the most important show I've ever seen was Sesame Street. Because it was the first show I absolutely fell in love with. It was my worldview for a very long time. Maybe it still is. And it's the first time I got to see all this really cool indie animation. I mean, animation is happening on Sesame Street that I would have been seeing was by really cool, you know, indie animators like the Hublies and all these cool people. And so I always wanted to work in kids animation and never really did that much. I did a little bit. I did some animation for the show Yo Gabba Gabba, a couple other things. We did a little Warner Brothers project. But this was the point when I was like, you know what? There's so much cool stuff happening in the kids space. I mean, in some ways, I feel like what's happening in kids animation right now is feeling a little more daring than even what I'm seeing on the adult side.
Yeah.
You know, when you see anything from, you know, Adventure Time to City of Ghosts to Eleanor and all the cool stuff happening on PBS and, you know, all these really cool character driven cartoon forward shows that are happening, Rosie's Rules, you know, Super Y, like all this cool stuff is happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to get into that and try doing my own version of what that might be. That became a company called Future Brain. I started a new company that's an offshoot of Ogden Look Studios that focuses on kids animation. And it's called Future Brain. And the first show that we are premiering is City Island, which premiered December of 2022. So about like 6.5 months ago.
Yeah.
And boy, it's been like one of the most exciting projects I've ever done.
Yeah.
And it's been so fun to see this world of City Island realized in the past few years.
That's awesome.
I know that was over 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great. I loved hearing your story. The thing I really love about it is, you know, while I love the big studios and I once had a dream of working at the big studios, there's something that's more romantic of like starting your own thing in New York, where I think you're the first animator that I've interviewed from New York.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Or director or whatnot.
There's a lot of us.
Yeah, yeah, there is a lot. And I even had somebody approach me like a couple weeks ago saying, hey, do you want to start a studio in New York? You know, there are all these tax breaks, and he was like pitching it to me. So yeah, there's something romantic and like beautiful about it. And it seems more artsy when it's that. It seems a little less commercial.
Yeah.
And so I think you're very unique as a guest in that way. So, yeah, I'm excited to go deep dive after we show the clip of City Island. I like the clip that you chose because it does reference animators. It references several different styles of art. And the characters are fun. Pay close attention as you watch like how they design each of these characters. I love the horse that's a couch. And
Mayor, you and your audience will get all the references in here with you know, the Moy Bridge and, you know, just animation. And God, we have Matisse, and there's a lot of references in here. That this was one that was a real passion episode for me. I knew immediately in doing this that I wanted to do like an art episode. And because our show was about social studies and civics, that became about art museums and all the experiences you can have in an art museum. And I, as a animation proponent, an animator, an animation fan, a proponent of animation as art, I made a section of the art museum specifically about animation.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to do that. And once you play it, we can deep dive on it. I'm happy to pick it apart.
All right, let's go.
Your art teacher, Miss Easel, and I are very excited for today's field trip.
The mayor has asked our class to paint a mural for the city on this wall.
Mayor Shitwell, I better bring my A game today.
I want everyone to paint a picture of your favorite place in City Island.
There's so much I love about City Island, I can't decide what I want to paint. I have painter's block.
I know a place around the corner that just might give you some ideas.
Is it an idea store?
No, but that's a good idea.
Wow, what is this place?
This is the City Island Art Museum. It's a place with art from all over the world for the whole community to see.
What kind of art? I'm a bit of an expert in comic books, so if it's comic books, I could probably lead the tour.
Let's go inside so you can see for yourself. this is the painting gallery.
Cool pictures. Oh, I like this one. It looks delicious. What kind of art is this, Miss Easel?
One of the best things about art is that it can speak for itself.
Hi, I'm Pigment. I may look like a bowl of fruit, but I'm a still life. That means I'm a painting of an arrangement of objects.
Cool. So art is flat paintings of things?
Art comes in all shapes and sizes. This is the sculpture gallery.
Whoa, what's this? Are you from outer space?
I'm from Earth, just like you. My name is Abby. I'm an abstract sculptor. My look is more about feelings than real things.
I feel like you look awesome.
Thanks. Come by the museum anytime and we can hang.
I get it. Art looks like something and sits still so you can see it.
That's true, but art can move too. This is the motion gallery. Some people find it very moving.
Hilarious.
Wow, look at this one. Are you a merry-go-round?
Nope. I'm Zoe the Zoetrope. When my pictures spin fast enough, they start to move. I'm a cartoon. Whee!
I hope one day I can be a cartoon. Wow, I never knew there were so many different kinds of art. I'm totally inspired.
I thought you would be. Are you ready to head back to the mural?
I sure am. I know just what to paint.
That's a really cool painting, Watt.
Thanks, Windy. This is a place that really inspired me.
Brilliant work, class. Mayor Sitwell, are you enjoying the mural?
I love it! It looks just like City Island, a beautiful mix of cultures and ideas. This is a mural that everyone can enjoy!
Oh, thanks, Mayor. The class did help, too.
I think that everyone gets an A+.
Yay!
Awesome. Great clip.
All right.
We kind of chatted a little bit behind the scenes as we were we were watching it. Lots of great stuff in there. Love the meta joke of I want to be a cartoon someday. I butchered it.
Yeah.
Someday I wish I could be a cartoon.
But someday I want to be a cartoon.
Yeah.
That was I believe that was Billy Lopez's line, if I can remember correctly. He's our head writer.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you liked it. Maybe that's a good entry point to talk about the show.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Okay. Well, it's called City Island. And it's a show, you know, that I created, which, you know, it started with the idea of I wanted to do a show about a living city. I'm such a huge animation fan, and a lot of my favorite animation was like anthropomorphic cartoons, anything from, you know, Betty Boop, Popeye, Sesame Street, Roger Rabbit. Like, I just grew up loving those kinds of cartoons. I also always really loved those dense cityscapes in like Richard Scarry, even Where's Waldo. Like, I just love like the richness of having like a whole world to explore. So that was where it started, was like, okay, well, could I do a cartoon where there's like a living city, you know? And I toyed with the idea of like, oh, is there like a little human kid that is, you know, lost in the city, or he falls asleep and wakes up? But we just were so much more interested in the characters themselves, the objects and the buildings and the cars and, you know, all of the different like living city elements, that we just leaned into it. And and as soon as I thought in those terms, like, oh, what if the city was the show, right? Then I think the first thing I said when we were in a room brainstorming was, oh, well, then, you know, the main character could be a little light bulb named Watt, mm-hmm. who has big ideas and lights up, right? And he could have a best friend and her name could be Windy because she's a kite. Literally, that was what I said in the room. And that's what it's been ever since then.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a show on PBS Kids, and it's about civics and social studies. So really it's about community and about how cities run and how systems work and all the people that work really hard to make a nice place to live for all of us. So, you know, it really, I love, like we said earlier, I'm a big New York City fan, and it's sort of my love letter to a city. And it's like any city on its like very best, sunniest, happiest day, you know? So,
nice.
That was sort of the way we conceived of the show. A very important, aspect of the show is that it's designed by Gemma Coral, who's one of my very favorite cartoonists, probably of all time. I'm just a giant fan of hers. I think she's one of the funniest, best cartoonists out there. And as soon as I came with the idea, I called Gemma. I was like, hey, Gemma, I got this idea. Look, I'm a cartoonist myself, but in this case, I always defer to people that are more talented than me. And I said, hey, Gemma, is there any way you would work on this thing? It's about a living city and we could draw a bunch of, you know, living shoes and cars and windows and garbage cans. And she was like, that sounds incredible. I would love to do that. So Gemma came on very early on when we were still just developing the idea. And like I said, this was the first project from a company I started called Future Brain with my partner, Dan Powell. Who is a showrunner that does like the Amy Schumer show and I Think You Should Leave and all these like really cool shows. So we put our heads together to create this kids company, and pretty quickly PBS was interested in it. So yeah. It was really exciting.
Yeah.
And developed it with me. And I had this like incredible development team, you know, Gavin Langford, you know, Sarah DeWitt, Adriano Schmidt, like all these awesome people at PBS. This like superpower PBS team developed it over the years with us to make it as good as it could possibly be. And now it's a show, you know,
yeah.
Now it's a show and it's out there in the world, which is exciting.
Yeah. What's the development cycle? So overall, like what's the development cycle then for each episode?
Yeah.
How long do you think each takes and what's kind of the process?
It took about 4 years to make. So I think the first year was just developing the idea. Cause like, look, this is PBS Kids. You know, they're the gold standard and,
yeah.
You know, everything they do has to be well thought out and have high quality content, both entertaining and smart with curriculum.
Yeah.
So the idea that, you know, we were just making a show about a living city. Oh, that's pretty fun. It's going to be funny. But like, what's it really about? You know what I mean? And who are these characters and why are we going to care about them? And I know that's something that you always talk about, Scott, is like, you know, where's the truth in this show?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the truth in this story? And it always comes from the characters. So we spent about a year just figuring out who's Watt, who's Wendy, who are their friends, what's their peer group, who are the authority figures in the world, who are the older people that we can meet, and how does that work? So that was the first year. The second year was writing. So we did a lot. We actually started writing the pilots and working on the outlines for episodes and just figuring out the backstories. The third year was making the pilots. And then the fourth year was making the series. So it's about 4 years.
Yeah. And all the episodes are about 3 minutes long. Is that the...
3 minutes. They're not about. They are exactly 3 minutes to the frame. To
awesome.
The frame, yes.
To the frame.
To the frame. There is
that's
a,
interesting.
Not,
how
not
is that? How is
more.
That as a? That could be a pretty tricky.
Yeah, I like it. I mean,
yeah.
I think one of the keys to animation often is actually the limitations.
Yeah, I know.
Like
yeah.
I think that with limitation comes freedom, and the fact that they're like, oh no, it's because I remember being like, oh, could it be like three minutes, 15, they're like, no,
five seconds,
3 minutes.
Yeah.
So, it's great. It makes you make hard choices.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And it's, I think one of the best ways to make a better product is to be willing to be less precious. And when you know, oh, we have to make those cuts, we cannot allow ourselves to run long or be short. Like you make important decisions about what's important.
Yeah. And you really have to reflect on the meaning, as you mentioned, you know, like,
yeah,
is this thing integral to the essence. Meaning? No, cut it, you know,
all the time. And, yeah. And not being repetitive. That's the quickest thing that gets cut. Cause you know, when you're writing a script, you know, you're telling a story for the first time. So you tend to repeat ideas, you
yeah.
know what I mean? And as soon as we have to get it down to 3 minutes, that's the first thing you do is like any repeated information hits the cutting room floor.
Yeah. Do you have to ever combine? You probably would have to combine some ideas too. Like,
sure.
Like
yeah,
if you repeated it twice, but two different times have a different kind of information, you might have to truncate those and make sure.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
It's all.
Yeah. Sometimes character, like, you know, a single character becomes what two characters were. And it's just all about like polishing, you know, it's like getting a, like a dirty stone and like polishing it to become this like really nice clean artifact, you know what I mean? Like it's
yeah.
like everything we're doing is just like polishing it down to its essence.
And do you have any numbers on like how long each episode takes
to make?
Yeah, like from beginning to end.
Well, we made 20 episodes in under a year, so like
okay.
And I think it was more like 8 months, so like about 20 episodes in 8 months.
Okay. That's quite a healthy amount.
Because you know, with animation production, you're working on a lot of episodes at once.
At once,
it's
yeah.
It's the only way to make it. So it's always hard to say, like, from beginning to end, how much each episode takes.
Yeah, you have to crunch numbers or something. Like, say, okay, we've...
And there's ideas in there that I've been thinking about my whole life. You know what I mean? It's like not to... But, you know...
I like that,
you know,
yeah.
The story about Picasso, you know, where, you know he would do these, like, rough sketches... you know, these like little scribbles sometimes, and then sell them for like, you know, whatever it was, like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And somebody was like, you know, that only took you like 30 seconds. Like, how could that be worth $100,000? And he said, that took me my whole life.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So how long does it take to make anything? I don't know. A lifetime.
But, oh, I know. But I know.
In actuality and production, probably a few months.
Yeah. Cool. That's great. Each, but then they overlap. So Yeah. You'd have to crunch numbers to know actually.
It's tricky.
We have, though, I remember back at Space Station, we were trying to like have the life cycle of an episode. It was about like 2 months to do each episode. But one phase was like the storyboarding and the concept art and the, you know, building everything. And then the other phase was the actual animation production. And they overlapped a little bit. And the animation production we could do in about 3 weeks on those episodes after we got going, which was crazy compared to the 8 months it took to do the first episode. Episode two took 3 months. Episode three and four took a month and a half. And then we suddenly figured out the recipe, you know?
That's why it's always so difficult. I mean, yeah, this is directing animation podcast. So we could go inside baseball, but it's like, you know, with networks, a pilot is not a very good indicator of what the series production will be like.
No,
in fact,
it's not.
It's almost the worst indicator because it takes the longest. You're doing it completely from scratch. You're doing a lot of trial and error, right? And it's completely unlike when you're actually making the series, where now you know what it is. You actually have like a process. You're doing everything concurrently, and you know you have assets to build on. Like, it's a completely different process. So it's difficult that most networks see the pilot as, you know, the testing ground for, oh, this is what the series is going to be like, because it's a completely different process.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I don't think I can make any more on that point. That was a great point. something else that I think would be great to go into is that a lot of my guests who I have on, they've seen maybe one, two episodes, you know, sometimes more. You've seen a lot of the episodes, and you talked about, you had
City Island?
Of the live cast, the direct animation live
cast. The live cast. Yeah, sure. I was going to say, because I've seen every City Island episode.
You probably should have.
I've seen a lot of
at least
live
once.
Cast episodes. Okay.
Yeah. But you talked about how you liked my animation philosophy, the way I think about animation directing and stuff.
Yeah.
And you've obviously liked the philosophy of many of the guests. I'd be fascinated to just hear like a lot of the things that you've thought of as you listen to the live cast and things that you'd like to add or like disagree with or, you know, debate about or whatnot. So.
Sure. Well, I'm also a fan of Golden Theme. And you know, that's been a big influence on me. Really all the fundamentals of storytelling are important. Yeah. Invisible Thread, Golden Theme. Yeah, there it is right there. Yeah. So, you know, I've always appreciated on your podcast, your discussions about, you know, what is the core of a story, right? And like, you know, why are we caring about these characters, their struggle, their successes, their failures? Like, what is the reason? And I just love working on that. And to me, you know, that's one of the most exciting parts of doing a show like this with City Island. I mean, honestly, doing any animation, but it's been such a crash course with City Island with the 3-minute format. You know, one of the biggest questions from PBS early on was like, you know, how much story can you tell in 3 minutes?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's great is I love short format. You know, I actually think 7 minutes might be like the perfect length, but 3 minutes is great too. And I've learned over the course of my career to tell a full story with fully realized characters in a very short amount of time. And it obviously can be done. I mean, like, look at Looney Tunes. I mean, like, these are some of the most important, iconic, fictional characters in the history of creation, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that people feel like, I mean, like, look, when I was a kid, like, I absorbed these characters that I was spending 7 minutes at a time with, you know, and I include Disney. I like the Disney shorts as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And look, Sesame Street segments, they were fast. You know, you might have only like 3 minutes to spend with Kermit, but Kermit to this day means a lot to me. Like, I relate to Kermit more than most people, you know. Like, I feel like Kermit's life is, especially in the Muppet Show, is the most similar to what my people go like, oh, what is a day in the life of running a studio? Like, watch the Muppet Show. Like, that's what it's like, right? Like, trying to keep a chaotic train on the rails every day. And it's, and it, as a creative endeavor, you know, is so much like what Kermit was doing on the Muppet Show. So being able to spend a small amount of time with a character, but yet really get to know them, was an important exploration with City Island. And I would add to that, that not only do they need to be characters that you like, they're relatable, they have flaws. I think that's another thing that I see when people are just getting started writing stories, you know, they're almost, you know, they feel so close to the characters, because usually it's like, well, this character's me, you know. They're shy about having characters that have genuine flaws. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, it's like my, you know, people are like, oh, what? Well, tell me about your flaws. Like, I'm just like too good at my job. You know what I mean? It's like, well, that's not a flaw. You know, like, so, you know,
I care too much.
Actual, yeah, my biggest flaw is I care too much. So, it's important that your characters have flaws that actually cause problems in their lives. You know what I mean? And for Watt, you know, early on, you know, in the early versions of Watt, I imagined him a little bit more of like an Encyclopedia Brown. He was like a little kid that like knew a lot, and he had all these big ideas, and he was the smartest kid in town. And over the course of developing it, you know, because like, look, it's no secret, Watt was based on me, and he was based on me as a kid. And, you know, I was a lot like that. But then if I look at my life realistically, you know, I had no idea what I was talking about. You know what I mean? I was a kid that like, I want to have my own comic company, and I want to do this, and I'm going to put on a show for the neighborhood. And that's all the kinds of things that Watt would do.
Did you really put on a show for the neighborhood?
I did lots of those. Yeah.
Me too.
Carnival in my basement, where I had
carnivals.
I did magic and had games, and I did performances and comedy, and I had superhero teams that I created, where I had superpowers that I assigned to my friends. I had my own series when I was a kid, where I'd made different episodes of my own cartoon. I had a comic company. So I was one of those kids that definitely borders on annoying, right? And it's like,
yeah,
oh,
me
man,
too.
Yeah, when I even describing it, I'm like, wow, that sounds like a really annoying kid. But like, I think the key with somebody like me or somebody like Watt is like the purity of intention.
Yeah.
Right. That like, Watt is not out to make a lot of money. He's not out to usurp anyone or be like overly, you know, financially successful. Those aren't his things. He's not like an influencer or something.
Yeah.
He just really likes making things.
Yeah.
And he really likes people, and he likes hanging out with people and meeting people and making things with his friends. And when we look at Watt in that light, it becomes really likable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And his quest becomes relatable and likable, and his struggle becomes relatable, because again, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He doesn't know what he's doing. So the fact that he is in a constant state of trying to do things that he fails at, and we, the audience, learn along with him, became like sort of the guiding light of the show. And again, a lot of that came from PBS, because they know kids so well. Mm-hmm. And like early on, when I was saying, oh, he's this know-it-all kid that's really good at everything, PBS was like, we're not sure about that. Right? Because kids don't know a lot of stuff. And that's what's great about kids, is they don't know stuff yet. And part of the magic of the PBS platform is that you're learning along with all of their characters, right? And that's why it's one of the most important places that kids can experience entertainment, is through, you know, the, you know, PBS platform, is because they've created this world of learning that doesn't feel like learning. It feels like an adventure. And that's been just such an honor to be working on.
I love that. It's great. There's a lot of things that popped in my head that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that you talked about influencers. You know, as artists and animators, We kind of need an influence in some way, right? If we want to make something big, we've got to have that audience. And how do you find it? Well, generally, the path that I see, you know, that I've seen most of my career is, well, you've got to build this social media following. And anytime I try to do that, it just doesn't work. The best way that I found to build the following is just to do what I do best, which is make stories. And a couple weeks ago, I was on a big family trip, and I had a bunch of my copies of my books, and lots of people wanted to buy them. And this one kid got injured, and so he got to read like the two books in 2 days. And just that's when it all came live, you know? And I was able to make this one-on-one connection with this kid and chat about his favorite movies and what he liked about these stories in particular, and which one he liked better, which isn't the one you would think commercially is the one he'd liked better.
Interesting.
And I think you have to kind of be patient for the audience, you know?
Yeah.
Like it seems like you've had the Adult Swim is obviously a much smaller audience than PBS, right? And you kind of honed your storytelling skills along the way until you can have this show that is hopefully having a great impact. I think it's really high quality. So, you know, hopefully it's resonating with the kids the way it should be.
The it is interesting. It's like I've done a lot of it's funny. I get the two leading criticisms I get of my career. One is everything you do looks the same. And the other is everything you do is completely different. Right. I hear both. And the truth must be somewhere in the middle there, because, you know, when I look at the work that I've done over the years, like I have a certain taste in animation. I tend to like hand-drawn cartoons. I like cartoony things. I like underground comics. I like independent cartoons. So I there's a taste that I have, and a lot of the people here at the studio have, you know, that tends to be sort of a direction that we take on things. But within, you know, all the different shows that we've done like Super Jail was like almost an anti-story show. Like almost everything that I said that I love, it was the antithesis of that. It was like animation for animation's sake, and, you know, stream of consciousness and surrealism, and, you know, letting the visuals lead the narrative over character development and plot, you know. And that was fun. It was like a lot of fun, and I'm so glad I got to do that. But once we did it, you know, the next show I think we did after that was Ugly Americans, which was wholly character driven. Mm-hmm. It was all about, you know, this world where there were these, like, you know, monsters living amongst humans, and they all had flaws just like all of us. And it was a lot more like City Island. It was about like the community of New York and all these interesting, eccentric people that have to live together. And what do they want? And what are they trying to do? So then it became all about characters, storytelling. And I've sort of, you know, the pendulum sort of swings back and forth throughout my career that way. I get into this like more experimental animation stuff where, like, again, where it's just like animation for animation's sake, and then classic storytelling and character-driven stories.
That's awesome. I think that's actually discouraged to do it that way too, because at a big company like Disney, that it'd be a lot harder to do that, right? But even in college classes, I remember that I was trying to do these really crazy things with my creative writing. I was in a creative writing class, right? Shouldn't I do crazy things?
Right.
The teacher one day wrote, like, with creative people such as yourself, you run into these kinds of problems. And he'd written that on a couple papers. I was like, okay, I'll show you I can do it. Then I went and wrote a straightforward story. And he's like, hey, this is what I've been talking about all along. This is what you should be doing. I was like, anyway.
I have a funny example of that. When I was in college, I was a lot more punk rock. And, you know, I was very, like, anti-mainstream animation. I was very underground, and the last thing I wanted to do was make like a highly accessible kids cartoon. Right. I was totally battling against that and trying to do everything, like, you know, adult and experimental and dark and weird, and I was doing other stuff. And there was a teacher I had that was like not enjoying what I was doing. To put it mildly, it was like, wow, you're doing all this stuff and you're not telling stories and your characters aren't really characters. And they gave the class an assignment, which was something as simple as like a cat and dog face a problem and solve it. And it has to be funny. Right. And I was so mad at having that kind of assignment, because that was so not the type of cartoon that I was doing, that in my opinion, as revenge, I was like, I'm going to do this exactly like what he's asking for. And I'm going to make a wholly gaggy, cartoony, like funny cat and dog animal cartoon. Uh-huh. And I did. And I handed it in thinking that the teacher would get it and be like, hey, you know what? What are you doing? Like, don't insult me. Like, I get, but he, the beginning of the class, he goes, I got all your assignments. I want to say they were all great. There was one that I was really impressed by, and it was mine. He had hated every other thing I did. And when he took me through took the whole class through the storyboard that I had written. And as I'm listening, I'm like, oh yeah, I got that, actually was pretty good. I unintentionally had made the best cartoon I had ever made. Like, it was an accident.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize that it was in my genetic code. I understood storytelling better than I even thought I did.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I knew, because I'd watched so many of these funny cartoons, I was like, oh, that is actually pretty funny. Like, oh, that, you know, that character, I do kind of care about that character. And it was an accident. I thought I was doing it to be a jerk, but it actually came out good. And that became like a big influential moment in my life when I realized, it's like, oh, you can make funny cartoons. Like, funny cartoons are great.
Yeah.
Not everything has to be deconstruction, you know?
No, yeah. We could do it with a lot less deconstruction nowadays anyway. So
but there's a deconstruction is good too.
It's,
I like everything.
Yeah.
I waver definitely between mainstream and independent. I like both. I mean, I'm going out and seeing whatever Pixar is putting out there, but I'm also looking at, you know, 60s era like Estonian animation as well. So I like it all.
Yeah. Crazily enough, the stuff I'm watching is all live action. And old.
Really? And that too?
Old. I'm going through the Mary Tyler Moore Show right now, and it's
nice.
It's remarkable.
It's
there was an episode that just happened that I commented to my wife, there's several characters they mention, you never meet them. At least the first.
Really?
The first, I'm on season 4. So,
right.
Like Lou Grant's wife, you never meet her. You just hear about Edie.
Really?
The episode you meet her, she leaves him.
Wow.
Sorry to spoil it, but it spoils nothing. Like, I would go watch that episode 3 more times if I could, you know, if I had time.
Right.
Because
rock solid.
You meet her. Oh, it's just heartbreaking when she leaves, and like, she almost doesn't leave because you can tell they still love each other, but she wants some time alone to kind of figure life out and learn more about herself.
Mm.
And he goes in to the door and he yells like, Edie, I'm warning you, if you come back. And he's like, I'll probably take you back. And I get goosebumps even talking about it now.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
Just how deeply,
yeah. It's cool.
Deeply grounded all these characters are, even though it's supposedly a comedy, you know?
Right. Well, I believe that was Carl Reiner working on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, or was it just Dick Van Dyke?
Well, see, that's the thing. That was the Dick Van Dyke Show. So the Mary Tyler Moore Show was Ed Asner and Phyllis. No, not Phyllis Diller. Her name's Phyllis. It's Cloris Leachman is in it.
Right.
And yeah, Ed Asner. Actually, it's crazy. There's this film this is way too, big tangent. We won't go off that tangent, but there was one episode where there's this boss that falls in love with Lou Grant, and my wife and I watch a movie every year that she likes. It's like a Hallmark movie. The two of them are the couple, but they're older. So it's just kind of really interesting.
That's
and,
funny.
And unusual and fun. But yeah, I think he won awards for that show. Ed Asner did.
I bet. Yeah. No, I'd say it's one of the classics.
It's funny. It took me several episodes to realize that was, you know, Carl Fredrickson from Up, you know,
but it was.
Yeah.
I think Cloris Leachman used to be in some of the Sid and Marty Krofft puppet shows too. Those crazy HR pup and stuff. I think Cloris Leachman was on one or two of those.
She probably was. She was very artsy herself. She was dabbling in a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some wild, those were a big influence on me. Those HR pup and stuff.
Yeah.
Those are good too. And again, the living character thing for sure. But no, I used to watch all those old, growing up, like I was, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, so I'm a latchkey kid, or I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
So my little brother and I, we would be home by, I don't know, 3-4 o'clock from school, and we were by ourselves from like, say, like 4 o'clock or like 7 o'clock when my parents would get home, and we would just watch TV.
Yeah.
And it was like, and this was a time that, you know, I think kids now maybe don't relate to that, like, you would watch something because it was on.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, I wouldn't choose to watch Mr. Ed or, you know, My Favorite Martian or, you know, Mary Tyler Moore or What's Happening. Like, these, like, sitcoms. Like, so we were both watching, you know, everything animated, anything we could see, from Looney Tunes they would play to all the, like, 80s stuff, Transformers, Thundercats. You know, that stuff we were obsessed with, you know, anything animated that came on, we would watch it and enjoy it. But then also, I think it would have been early, maybe it was Nick at Night, maybe, or something. I don't know where I was watching these shows, but I watched, I mean, they would play like Laurel and Hardy. Like, yeah. I would watch like Laurel and Hardy and like the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
And like it's like,
this really
I
old
can't
stuff,
believe
yeah.
the breadth of Golden Girls.
Yeah.
I mean, the breadth of shows that I was, I don't know. I talked to my brother about that. Like, how were we watching that many TV shows? And they all, I mean, it's like, if you know anything about genetics and neurology, like, that stuff goes into your genetic code.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
still there. Like, there's plots for City Island where I'm like, I think this might be a Golden Girls episode. Like, you don't know. It's like, like, it's funny how this stuff just sticks with you. But luckily, a lot of that stuff was really good.
Yeah. No, that's the thing about it. As you were talking about it, like, you watched it because it was on. Lots of the things that I see people choosing to watch and that I feel inclined to choose to watch aren't quite as good as, like, the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I would never have chosen to watch that. Except Brian McDonald yeah. recommended it. And so I started yeah. watching it. And I was like, wow, this thing is amazing. This yeah. is just every episode hits in a different way. And there's no repetition. I mean, there's repetition, but it always feels fresh. And you always feel like you're going somewhere new with these characters. It's just, it's remarkable, you know?
I also like some of the weirdo stuff. Do you ever watch like Ernie Kovacs, anything like that? Like, okay, that's something worth checking out. If you like old TV, Ernie Kovacs was a really cool, like, talk show, your show of shows. I like a lot of the sketch stuff too, because I like short stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a treasure trove. And what's great is it's all on YouTube.
Yeah, I know.
So any of it, like, it's like, that's what's so funny about nowadays is, like, you know, it used to be difficult to become an expert, but if you mentioned the Mary Tyler Moore Show, maybe one of your listeners will, you know, by tomorrow, they could probably watch at least a few seasons and be like just as much of an expert as you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, like you said, you're like, I hadn't watched it before. Now I'm like watching every episode. And that's cool. That's great. I mean, it's all out there. So.
Yeah, yeah, it is. All right. Well, we have gotten down to the wire. Let's get to the Get Wiser moment.
Okay.
You already know the question.
I love the Get Wiser. I'm excited. I do want to say, you know, that, you know, there is, you know, just since we're the Animation Direction podcast, I have to mention my animation director for City Island is Katie Wendt.
Uh-huh.
And she's been there since the very beginning, and she developed the show with me, and she's been directing all the episodes, and she's like another key to the success of the show. And I have to mention, because I mentioned Gemma, I got to mention Tunde Adebimpe, the musician that does an original score for every episode. It's rare that you get that in a show, and he's a famous world famous rock star from the band TV on the Radio. He did the theme song and original music for every episode. So, you know, all of these pieces, you know, build to make, I think what's a unique show. And also, you know, we talked about music, animation. The other big aspect of City Island is the environment, the location.
Yeah. It's
and
a cool environment.
Our exactly. Our background director, his name is Jeremy Jusset, and I actually went to SVA with him. And so we've known each other for 25 years.
Love it.
And he's done almost every background of every show I've ever done. So the
Wonderful.
Fact that I can make these shows with friends.
Yeah. And he keeps coming with you.
That are all talented.
Yeah.
And Tunde, people don't know this about Tunde. He was the musician. He was an animator himself. And he used to animate the show Celebrity Deathmatch on MTV. Huh. And that's how we met. And then he went off to become a world famous rock star. So I just wanted to, before we hit the Get Wiser moment, I just wanted to say, you know, City Island is about community and the good things that come when people, you know, collaborate.
When you collaborate.
And that's
yeah.
what this show is too. This show
yeah.
is a manifestation of that, of like a lot of really cool people, a lot of smart, talented people that all are collaborating together to make something that's better than any one of us could do on our own.
They sound really cool. Fly me out. Let's meet them.
Yeah. When's the Scott Weiser Symposium? Are you going to have the Animation Director Con or
someday? We'll get there. Got to get my first feature film off the ground.
Well,
first.
I'd like to be there. If you do it, I would love to be there.
Awesome. All right, Get Weiser moment.
Let's do it.
Let's get the highest concentration of truth and meaning into a story. What's the best approach?
Okay, so. You know, I tried not to prepare too much for this question because I know the Get Weiser moment is the apex of every episode. I think the truth for me in most of what I do, but definitely in City Island, it comes from two main factors. And both are about connections. One is the characters. Mm-hmm. I think every story, I mean, I almost think it's a trope to say at this point, but you know, every story lives and dies on the characters mm-hmm. and how much we can relate to these characters. And even if it's a villain, mm-hmm. you need to relate to them. The hero, the villain, it's important that they all have flaws. They all have talents, flaws, successes, failures, just like we do.
Yeah.
Right. And that's going to be the key. They need to be a fully realized character, not just a shell, not just a metaphor for some idea. They need to be a character that actually has some level of consciousness to themselves. Right.
Yeah.
So it's important, you know, with City Island, like I said, like Watt and Wendy, like I really feel like I understand these characters, like I relate to them. And once you get to that point where you feel like you know the characters, then they kind of take on a life of their own, mm-hmm. and then they start surprising you, which yeah. is really interesting. Like you're like you'll pitch an idea, and you're like, oh, I guess that character might react that way. That's interesting. Like yeah. I wouldn't have originally thought that, but yeah, that is how they would react to the situation, or that is an idea that they would come up with. I mean, it's always interesting when a character can come up with an idea that you wouldn't have come up with. Right?
Yeah.
That's a form of consciousness. That's kind of interesting. So I think one big facet is the characters themselves and your ability to connect with them both as a writer and then in the end as a viewer. And
yeah.
then the other aspect is the concept itself, right? What is the content of the story?
Yeah.
What story are we telling? Okay, we have the characters, but now they have to do something. They have to experience something that's meaningful. And in City Island, that tends to be about community, right?
Yeah.
And is this a world we're presenting that I want to spend some time in? Even a scary world can be something that you want to spend time in,
yes.
right? It's like,
yeah.
that's what Disney was always so good at. It was like, everybody thinks of Disney as, you know, the princess's castle and the beautiful forest, but watch Snow White. It's also a terrifying forest, right?
Yeah.
And scary places and a scary dungeon, right? So it's like, but they're all places you want to go to. You want to see them. You want to see what it's like to be there.
Yeah.
And also not just the environment, but why am I there? Right. I need to learn something about existence. Right. I really want to see something that surprises me, that I find interesting about my experience in the universe. And with City Island, that's usually the North Star is civics and social studies and learning about how does this world work? Who are these people that I see every day? What do they do? What are they like? And that's the experience. So I think having characters that are relatable and that you connect with and you're interested in a world, in a story that you connect with and are interested in. To me, if you can combine those two elements, you're going to find truth.
That's great. I actually misunderstood you too at the beginning. So I want to add one little other thing. When you said
sure.
connections, I thought you were talking about connections between the characters. Mm. And that really lit up my
that
brain.
That can be it too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you kept circling around that. You said, you know, the community, this show is about community. It's about the
yeah.
connections. And that's where
it's
the meaning is found.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Because yeah. it's true. What I like is that, like, you know, you're right. It's all about relationships. And there's relationships that characters have with each other. And there's relationships that you have with the characters.
Yeah.
That's what's amazing about animation is that you feel like these people are your friends, you mm-hmm. know, and you feel like you know these people. And little kids are like that. And I love that, like, to your point earlier, what you were saying about your book and, you know, finding that connection with somebody that had read them, you know, and that it was meaningful to them. It's like so fun to put these episodes out and kids are like, oh, I really like Mark. Like Mark's really cool. Like I like Mark's got, Mark's like me, you know what I mean? And then like people like Lydia, the hat, you know, it's like, oh, Lydia, like, I like how she likes sports, but she does not as good as she wants to be. And like, you know, like the fact that these characters, you know, are interesting to these people and feel, people feel close to them. They see themselves in them. That's really powerful. It's powerful as a creator and hopefully it's powerful for a viewer.
Absolutely. We want Kermit. We want Looney Tunes, you know, we want to have that kind
Kermit
of an impact.
And Miss Piggy and Elmo and Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah.
And I mean, these are cool characters, you know, these are cool characters that are very, very interesting. I'm obsessed. Gonzo. I was obsessed with Gonzo. If you want to get into the Jim Henson world, like, I was completely obsessed with Gonzo. But then, you know, what's interesting is like, that was like my generation, but then like now, you know, I talk to like PBSers, it's like, there's like Arthur and the Kratt brothers, like their characters. And like, it's like, there's all these generations of people that are relatable to the viewers and it's exciting.
That is really exciting. Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show. It was a wonderful conversation.
Yeah.
Where would you like people to connect with you? I hope you had fun. I did. Yeah.
The best way to watch City Island is on pbskids.org. Every episode, you can watch it within seconds, because the streaming service there is so great. Uh-huh. So you can watch it on anything PBS, but pbs.org is a good place to look at it. But also check out our Instagram, City Island PBS. We post a lot of stuff there. For your fans, like we do a lot of process art, original sketches.
Nice.
We'll play animatics of the episodes. Ooh. And, you know, we do a lot of like behind the scenes stuff on there. And then social media for Augen Blick Studios is Augen Blick Studios.
Yeah.
And I'll let you all figure out how to spell my big long name.
It's in the title of the video.
There you go. That's an easy way to find it.
Awesome. Cool. And I'll also put it down in the show notes. So,
perfect.
All right. Thanks a bunch.
Scott, this was so much fun. And congratulations on everything that you're up to, too, because you're making all kinds of cool cartoons yourself.
Yes. Yes. Hopefully good news is coming soon. So on that front.
Awesome.
All right.
Great.
Until next time, I hope we all get a little wiser.
Thank you for watching the Directing Animation Livecast, hosted by Scott Weiser. Audio version edited by Kira Horowitz. Copyright Scott Weiser, LLC 2022. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube and ring that notification bell.